WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. All the controversy over the rap group Two Live Crew's explicit lyrics has got rock and roll historian Ed Ward thinking. Rap music may be a relatively new development in pop music, but the controversy over lyrics goes back to the early days of rock and roll.
With Me Annie by Hank Ballard and the Midnighters was a historic record. It was one of the very first songs by a black artist that sold in quantity to white teenagers in the 1950s, and it started the process of closing a yawning racial gap. But we shouldn't lose sight of why those teenagers bought it. It wasn't because Hank and the boys sang in tight jazzy harmony. It wasn't because of the bluesy inflection in Ballard's voice, nor was it the rockin' beat. They bought it because it was dirty. That line about "give me all my meat" was pretty racy in 1954, and kids would gather around the turntable and bug their eyes. "I can't believe he really said that," they'd say. Naturally, what got me thinking about the Annie records, which also included Annie Had a Baby and Sexy Ways, was the recent furor around Two Live Crew, particularly the chilling photograph of the black record salesman being handcuffed as he was arrested for selling it. A local newspaper reporter called me and asked, "But hasn't rock and roll always pushed the limits sexually?" That's one way to look at it, I guess. But ever since the day in the 1920s, when a Midwestern bishop told his flock that jazz was leading the youth of America down the primrose path to hell, those were his very words, there's been conflict between what the older generation perceives and what teenagers are doing. And when it turned out that what teenagers were doing was crossing racial lines, there was going to be trouble no matter what. Nor was it just a question of racial lines.
And now here is Elvis Presley.
The myth has always had it that Elvis appeared on Ed Sullivan's TV show, shot from the waist up. But in fact, by the time he reached Sullivan, he'd already been on the Dorsey Brothers show and Sullivan's hated rival Steve Allen's show. The waist up treatment only happened once on Sullivan. That may have been censorship, but as it turned out, Elvis was as good a censor as could have been hoped for. When he recorded Big Joe Turner's immortal Shake, Rattle, and Roll, he left out the verse that said, "You wear those dresses, sun comes shining through, I just can't believe all of that belongs to you." And when he recorded Smiley Lewis's One Night, he changed it from "One night of sin is what I'm now paying for" to "One night with you is what I'm now praying for." No, if you go back to the original editorials and letters to the editor, you'll see what people really didn't like about Elvis was that he was poor white trash. All of the rockabillies were, and of course very few of the great black entertainers of the period came from the upper classes. It was okay for a Jewish boy from a middle-class background like Benny Goodman to be insolent, but it was clear that a lot of these new performers, be they Elvis, James Brown, Little Richard, or Jerry Lee Lewis, didn't know their place. There's another consideration we should keep in mind when the Two Live Crew issue comes up, too. Party records. If you're old enough to remember the 50s, you know what I'm talking about. Records of dirty comedy routines and songs, sexually explicit, by performers like Rusty Warren, Red Fox, and the folks who remind me most of Two Live Crew, Doug Clark and the Hot Nuts. Doug Clark made a fortune touring white fraternities, in which I'm willing to bet more than one of today's DAs and other anti-obscenity crusaders grooved to his crude rewrites of rhythm and blues classics. Unfortunately for the record companies who recorded these party acts, though, nobody ever set out to get them. As Two Live Crew has found out, you can sell a lot of records that way. The anti-obscenity crusaders have, as always, targeted the music enjoyed by the underclasses of America's teenagers, rap and heavy metal. The prosecution, though, has struck another all-important rock and roll lifeline, independence. Two Live Crew does not record for a major label, and the guy whose photograph I saw was not being handcuffed in a chain record store, but in a mom-and-pop store he owned. Both independent labels and independent retailers have always been in the forefront of rock and roll. They've been the ones to take chances on unknown groups, recording them and selling them to their original core of fans who give them visibility in the marketplace that can lead to mass acceptance. Independent labels and independent retailers just don't have the financial clout to sustain protracted litigation, and the chilling effect of that has me as scared as the First Amendment threat does. But to go back to the reporter's question, sure, rock and roll has always pushed the limits. It's teenagers' music, so it's bound to be offensive and obnoxious to elders. Big deal. What's scary is the extent to which the federal government has gotten involved. Once, they restricted themselves to doing things like drafting Elvis. Now, with record labeling, sending record clerks to jail and confiscating their personal property, and putting party records on trial, it's a whole new ballgame. I think we should ask ourselves if we really want to play.
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll, and he writes for the Austin Chronicle.
You gotta fight for your right to party! You gotta fight for your right to party!
This is Fresh Air.